do they not like your friends or not like your family anymore? That's a huge red flag. And I will tell you, if your friends don't like him or don't like her, they are your best judge for you. They know you. So, and I know it hurts a little bit when your friends don't like them. However, if they're saying something's wrong, it might be time to open up your eyes and really look and see what's there, because they see it well before you see it.
Podcasting from WealthWave Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, this is Leadership Now, the official vision and strategy podcast of WealthWave.
Hello, everyone. As part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, we're interviewing somebody really special today. This is Lieutenant Deborah Kalish, and she's with the Johns Creek, Georgia Police Department. And for those of you who have been to the WealthWave headquarters, we are located in Johns Creek, Georgia. So, Debbie, thank you very much for being here today.
Absolutely.
So, Debbie is also a really close friend of mine, and I just have to say, whenever I'm out with Debbie, I feel so safe. As you all can see, she's like my badass friend. Nobody crosses you. So Debbie and I have talked a lot over the years about domestic violence and the women we've known or come in contact with who've unfortunately been victims of this. So I wanted Debbie to kind of talk to us from the police officer's standpoint, what you all see, some of the things that, you know, we should be on the lookout for, what can we do to help this situation?
Well, first I want to say that domestic violence has no boundaries. It is all races, all genders, all social, economic realms.
Right.
It just doesn't matter exactly, you know, where you are. So if you think that, you know, the rich don't deal with it, they absolutely do. Everybody deals with it. Typically, women deal with it a little bit more, but you know what? It happens to men too. They say about 1 in 3 women in their lifetime will have a situation where they are involved in some sort of domestic violence. And it kind of breaks it down to a lot of different things that happen. Typically, it is it's a power and control thing that the perpetrator has over the victim. And it starts slowly. It's not like something where they meet and, you know, a week later he smacks the crap out of them or something like that.
Right.
It's a slow process, typically. And, you know, they build this relationship, and then all of a sudden they start changing and the more controlling and the power and all that goes in there. So some of the things that happen that I've seen is plenty of calls where I talk to the victim and he has taken away all of her financial ability to leave.
Right.
I've seen one actually, he took her passport. She was from another country. You know, he had her license. She was so controlled where he kept all the money. She had nothing. And over the period of time that I would go and talk to her, and I would give her little tips of, hey, well, why don't you start as you can, you know, collecting the money and putting the money aside. If you can keep some aside, you know, get your stuff ready. If you, you know, one thing I did tell her when she decided to move out, I was like, when he's gone, and they were married, when he was gone, I was like, take everything. Everything you absolutely can take with you.
Right. Because
you're not going to want to go back.
Right.
And deal with it. It's a horrible situation. And we see it happen over and over again. And unfortunately, on our side, we try to talk to them. Obviously, we document everything that happens with the domestic violence violence laws now in Georgia. They're pretty strong as far as if we see anything, we document completely what happened. We're supposed to figure out who the primary aggressor is in the situation and then arrest if need be on that, whether or not the victim wants to prosecute or not.
Right.
That's one of the laws that's pretty much changed because before we would get there, and a lot of times the victim, in fear of, oh my gosh, I'm about to lose, you know, the breadwinner of the family, or I know this is going to be really bad when they get out of jail. All these things are going through their head. And then they would change the story once we got there and say, no, I don't want to prosecute or whatever. So now they don't really even have a choice.
Right. Which is good because either out of fear or just complete dependence, whatever it is, there is this hesitancy by victims to turn their abusers in. And it must be a little frustrating for police officers at times.
It can be. I was telling somebody earlier that, you know, when you're young as an officer and you're just starting off, you kind of learn. Well, you don't understand it. Well, you don't understand why they just don't leave.
Right.
There is a lot more to it. You know, one of the things that happens when somebody's ready to leave is the most dangerous time for a domestic violence person, because the perpetrator feels like they have nothing to lose. And that, like, it's like when you go to get a protection order, which obviously we always say, you know, go get the protection order. It's just a piece of paper. That doesn't stop this person who's already mentally unstable from coming at you. If we can call us, we can do something more when they have the protection order. But it makes it very dangerous at that moment. So they said it, you know, your danger raises by like 70% at that time when you decide to actually leave. And that's when a lot of people get killed, or, you know, they start stalking them and chasing them across the country. And they just, at that point, the abuser feels like they have nothing to lose.
Well, what are some things that victims can do when they're at that most dangerous point, when they've made the decision to leave and they're taking steps to do that? What are some of the things they can do to help make it a little safer for them?
One, I would come up with a plan ahead of time. It's just not the spur of the moment thing. Typically what happens in the domestic abuse is the person gets isolated. And that's intentional. So they kind of lose their friends and lose their family and stuff like that. Is one, I would start reaching back out to those people and let them know what's going on and get your plan together. So you have a couple different people that you can go to when you decide to leave. Get your bank account, because usually you don't have a bank account. Get a bank account, you know.
Get a credit card.
Get a credit card, absolutely. Start planning. And it sounds so weird that you would even have to do this, but plan your future for your future date of leaving. Make a to-go bag. Hide it. Get your bag together. So, you know, if it comes to that moment, you're like, oh no, he's going to kill me or she's going to kill me, you're ready to go.
Right.
And obviously call 911. We will come, and we're there to do whatever we can. There are shelters.
There
are a lot of resources out there that we have.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I don't know if it's going to help all the way, but if we can make an arrest, we can have the judge force that person into counseling. And a lot of times that's the first step. They have to go in. They have to get help. For whatever reason, most of the time they grew up in this area, in this craziness, and that's why they became crazy. A lot of times the victims, especially with emotional abuse, they've grown up in it, so they don't recognize right away that this is wrong.
Right. Right. So they think that's the way
that's
all
the
families
normal.
Are. Mm-hmm. Right, that's normal.
Yeah. So I would say just make your plan and keep it together and just, you know, little by little, get it ready.
Well, and one of the things that I've counseled women about, in addition to getting that secret bank account or getting that secret credit card, and, you know, using a different email address, using a P.O. box or a friend's address for the statements, is to, you know, when you come into contact with the information about the family's bank accounts or the retirement accounts or the investment accounts, take pictures with your phone. Large assets in the house or large assets that the family may own, take pictures with your phone. Because once you leave, you never want to have to go back. And you want to have all of that information with you on your phone or some other device.
That's a great idea.
So you've got that for when you do have to, you know, file for divorce or custody or whatever it is that you're going to need to do. One of the things that you do in our community that's so great is Debbie gives self-defense classes in Johns Creek. And I persuaded someone very close to me who had just gotten out of a very abusive relationship to attend Debbie's class. And she didn't want to go. I kind of had to drag her there, and then she didn't really want to participate in it. And then if you want to talk about what happened in the class.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
it was fantastic. And then her daughter.
Yeah.
She brought her daughter with her, and I was like, oh my gosh.
Because you all use
The pads.
Yeah. Yes.
I always tell women in the class that when you start hitting the pad, it feels good. Use it. Who's this person, right? And it is a release of energy of things that have happened, especially for her to hit the pad. I'm like, as long as you hit the pad and don't hit me, we're going to be good.
Right.
We'll be okay. So, no, it was fantastic. And she's actually come back one other time and taken the class. And I'm going to get her to come back again because it's one of those things that you have to keep doing and have to practice to remind yourself on how to do it. So I love teaching it. You know, it's very near and dear to my heart. It's definitely a passion.
Well, and I would look for, you know, those opportunities in your community, whether it's through the police department or some other group to, you know, take self-defense classes. Not that we want to become aggressive people who beat other people up, but we do want to be able to protect ourselves. And that release you feel when you hit the pads, it is something that women in particular, we don't get to feel that. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that feels like most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought she was going to beat that pad up, beat the stuffing out of that pad. Oh my gosh.
I love it.
So, you know, Debbie, at the very beginning, when you had said something that I think is real important, that it's not something that happens overnight. The domestic violence, the financial control, it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that kind of incrementally over time unfolds. What are some of the red flags that our listeners should be on the lookout for?
Well, some of the things, it goes back to the control. So are they starting to control what you're doing? Are they putting you down emotionally? They might actually start making threats.
Right.
It's every little thing about them controlling your world. So do they not like your friends or not like your family anymore? That's a huge red flag. And I will tell you, if your friends don't like him or don't like her, they are your best judge for you. They know you. So, and I know it hurts a little bit when your friends don't like them. However, if they're saying something's wrong, it might be time to open up your eyes and really look and see what's there, because they see it well before you see it.
Yes. from, you know, if you're in a new relationship and your partner wants to take care of you and, you know, wants to make the decisions about what you all do and about your money.
Wants you to quit your job.
Yeah, and you think, oh, you know, he loves me. He wants to take care of me. Isn't that wonderful? You may not pick up on the fact that that's the steps.
It could be.
Towards controlling your life. But you're right. Your friends and family may think, holy smokes.
What are you doing?
You've been this independent person your whole life, and, and now you're willing to give it all up for this other person. If they really love you, if they really care about you, they will love and care you as you are right now, that independent person.
Absolutely. Like I said, it happens to a lot of people. I just watched a video of a woman who graduated from Harvard. She had an amazing job in New York City, and it was like slow and progressive, and he moved her out of town, moved her out of her job, and lo and behold, for the next several years, two times a week, he basically beat the crap out of her and put a gun to her head, and she said that several times she thought she was going to die.
Right.
And she didn't even realize at first that she was a victim.
Right. A lot of women say that they can't see it when they're in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. They can't see it. And I had a friend of mine, wonderful woman, survivor, tell me that, you know, the police had been called on her and her husband fighting, and she had been harmed physically, and the police were trying to give her a pamphlet or information about domestic shelters that were nearby. And she said, I kept looking at the police like, why are you telling me this? I'm not a victim of domestic violence. Oh. And she just couldn't see it. And I hear that from a lot of women when you're in the middle of it, you can't see it. So talking to your friends and your family members is so important. Maybe they see it. So, you know, be open and listen to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. You know, and as I said, unfortunately, that's one of the first things that an abuser will do is try to separate you from the ones that you love and the ones that know you, because they know other people are going to see it and question what's happening. So,
right.
It's a hard situation. It's hard to get out of. Typically, it takes an average of 6 or 7 times of leaving before somebody leaves for good.
Wow. Why do you think that is?
The whole combination of the finances, they don't have anywhere to go. They, you know, feel like they need this person, whether or not they have children. A lot of times they won't leave because of the children. The threats of harm, they believe it. You
right.
know, if you leave me, I'll kill you. And they believe it because this has happened over and over and over again.
Right. Well, I guess that's why having that plan in place is so important.
Absolutely.
You also mentioned that there is no stereotype for who might be a victim, that you've seen this across many, I mean, socioeconomic levels, genders, races, the whole works. You can't tell just by looking at somebody that they are a victim or are going to be a victim. So if they can't see it, we have to be on the lookout for it.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we deal with a lot of it. It really is. Those numbers are high, but it really is out there. Those are the numbers.
How can the police help?
Go and listen. Listen to what the people are saying. I mean, you're going to have the perpetrator or the abuser who's a master manipulator.
Right.
If they really listen and they pay attention, they can give advice. They can write the report. They can arrest the abuser, depending on if a law has been broken. Most of all, they can listen and talk to the victim and start preparing them for the next step.
Right.
And hopefully giving them information of where they can go and where they can get some other help.
Right. And also, do you think putting that protective order in place or, you know, involving the legal system is...
Absolutely. You know, if we can make charges on them and getting the legal system involved and getting the judge who, I mean, just here in Johns Creek and, you know, I'll see the judge will make that mandated, anger management, all these different programs that this person needs to jump through. Whether or not in the long run it helps, I don't know because I never get to see that far down the road in the future and follow it through. But it's a start for sure. And then the temporary protection order of going and getting that done, carrying that paper with you, because if the person, let's say a lot of them go into stalking and stuff like that, if you are somewhere and this person is violating the order, it becomes an aggravated stalking case, which now makes it into a felony. And there's a lot more teeth in what we can do when it becomes an aggravated stalking case.
Well, any last words of wisdom or advice for the people who are listening?
Don't be afraid to call 911. Don't. We're here to help. That's absolutely what we are here for. And then come take one of my classes.
Yes. Thanks, Debbie. I mean, one of the best things I did was get a badass friend like her. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Leadership Now, WealthWave's official podcast. If you like this episode and want to hear more, check out wealthwave.com/podcast or Leadership Now on iTunes. Join us each week to grow as an entrepreneur and succeed as a leader in the financial business with WealthWave.